What's good, everybody? This episode of the podcast is sponsored by DistroKid. They are the go-to for digital music distribution and the easiest way for musicians to get your music onto Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, TikTok, YouTube, and more. They offer unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of their earnings in stores 10 to 20 times faster than any other distributor. Fastest payouts. They help out with automatic splits, cover song clearance, and all kinds of other amazing tools and templates to help you get the most visibility for your releases. I dig this company and appreciate their business model that offers more features than any other distributor at the most affordable price possible for solo musicians, bands, DJs, studio artists, and any other creators that are producing music in their home, and they also offer label services as well. They've got three different tiers to offer creators that start as low as $22.99 a year. That's just $1.92 a month, and even their top tier is just $7.50 per month. And the best part about DistroKid sponsoring the podcast is that they are offering Dan Cable Presents listeners and viewers 30% off your first year membership with DistroKid, making their already affordable prices even cheaper for you. Check out the link in the episode notes. I will also put it in my Instagram bio in the link tree. That link will give you 30% off that first year of service. Super stoked to have DistroKid sponsoring the podcast and cannot thank them enough for their longtime support of this thing. This episode of the podcast is also sponsored by Puff Coffee. Puff is one of my favorite coffee shops in Portland, Oregon. They've got a location off 28th and Stark in Southeast. Their coffee is delicious, and everyone that works there is always super friendly. I had the pleasure of staying in their neighborhood for a month or so, and it was just a real treat to have this as my neighborhood coffee shop for a bit. And now I find myself going out of my way to get over there and get some coffee. Puff Coffee was started by the founder of Stumptown Coffee, and they are making small batch coffee roasted daily here in Portland. Their mission: to find, roast, and deliver the most delicious coffees anywhere. Their small batch process means that they get to keep things interesting with experimental blends and single origin gems while always keeping the classics on deck. They've got a variety of beans to choose from, and if you're not in the Portland area, you can order their small batch coffee straight to your home through their website, and you can use the coupon code DANCABLE, all one word, for 20% off a coffee subscription. Links for Puff Coffee will be in the episode notes. Big thanks to Puff for supporting the show and for their amazing small batch coffee. Now let's get into the episode.
Look down at the recording of Slobber Nerds. I was down to say.
What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Dan Cable Presents podcast. Thank you for tuning into the program once again. If this is your first time listening, thanks for checking out the show. You can find fresh episodes coming at you every Tuesday. And if you want to help support this thing in a free way, you can do so by clicking subscribe on iTunes, clicking write a review, giving the podcast 5 stars if you feel like it is deserving of so. And that will help propel this thing into the tops of those iTunes charts, giving it more visibility on the national and international levels, helping strangers find the podcast, and just a great way to contribute to the growth and sustainability of this thing. Appreciate the hell out of all the folks that have already taken the time to do so. If you're not listening on Apple, just hit like, follow, subscribe wherever you are listening from. Tell a friend about the podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, give it a subscribe there. And check out the monthly playlist that I've been dropping on Spotify every first of the month. Links for those are in the episode notes. Hope everybody is doing well out there. This week on the cast, episode 411, we've got Portland-based rapper Soup Dread is on the show. This is a dude that I've been wanting to get on the cast for a long time. I remember getting put onto his music back in 2020 amidst the lockdown of COVID. It was like right around the time I had gotten a DJ controller just before lockdown had happened. So I was spending a lot of time just messing with that DJ controller, doing some recorded sets that I would post from time to time on SoundCloud. And I think the first track that I heard from Soup was called Creature, and it's got this killer Gil Scott Heron sample on it, and it's just like one of those tracks that every time I hear it, I really associate it with this particular time back in 2020. I was living at this apartment, and in the back room of that apartment is where I had my DJ controller set up and kind of my podcast studio situation at the time. So yeah, just one of those songs that kind of like brings me back to that time. Every time I hear it, I just really remember this very specific DJ set that I had recorded at that time. So yeah, love that song, and it was what put me on to Soup and kind of just kept up with what he was doing ever since then. And he's just a killer rapper and great lyricist, and love his wordplay and his references that he has for so many different areas of pop culture. And was excited to jump on the mics with this dude, and we actually recorded this podcast twice for full transparency. This past week, Soup had initially come through earlier in the week, and I think that the edible that he had consumed prior to coming through kind of hit him sideways and maybe a little heavier than he had anticipated or wanted for our first time meeting and this conversation on the mics. And I really enjoyed it. It just maybe like didn't have the fluidity that either of us were hoping for as far as capturing a comprehensible conversation. And I think I could have probably pulled something together and made it happen in the editing, but we both decided that maybe we should just give it another go. So that's what we did yesterday, and I'm glad that we did. I think this particular chat had a little more focus to it and wasn't really about recreating this conversation that we had a couple days prior. It just kind of helped me zero in on what I wanted to talk to Soup about more, and it almost acted as kind of like this pre-interview. So I appreciate Soup's time and him being down to hang a couple times this past week. Stoked to hear the music that he is cooking up, both solo and in collaboration with others. And after we were done recording the conversation, Soup showed me some of the music that he's been working on, and stoked to see how that stuff materializes. So I will put all the links for Soup Dread in the episode notes so you can keep up with him. And with all that, we are going to get into our conversation. This is episode 411 with Soup Dread, and to kick things off, we are going to play that Creature track that I mentioned before as my entry point into Soup's music. And thanks for tuning in. Let's do the damn thing. The highway,
like a creature from another time.
Them little boys wanna copy the man. Colleagues sent facsimiles straight to Japan. Hourglasses strip hot side Arabian sand. Sell this in the swamp meat or black market in France. I lit a nog chime in the blue Honda with the ex-hyena trainer from Uganda. He's the black bomber, handsome and dreaded. Forgot the Buddha blessings in the Manischewitz. Fornicate with land masses till they pregnant.
Like a creature from another time.
Wait, I'm your baby mama, first love. She kept it in the closet when my shirt hung. Puppet unstrung, that's the past. Wait, fuck it, I'm numb. We can't have a conversation, you actually dumb. I'm a smarter figure, fuck all you niggas. I fight all you niggas, we can catch a fade like some flying barber clippers.
We
wash
are.
The dishes
for
the critics and the
shout
critics.
Out allergy season.
Allergy season is heavy. I'm trying to take that daily allergy pill.
Yeah, I took something today because I just... Yeah, I was like, I escaped it this year. I didn't.
Dude, it's just like every day. If I remember to take the allergy pill, I'm in great shape. And if I don't, at about 2 p.m., I'm reminded that I did not take that allergy pill. And I just feel not great.
Well, I decided against it because I lived with a cat all.
Okay.
The last couple years. So yeah. I thought it was a cat shedding. But.
No, it's just allergies.
It's just old school, it's just classic allergies.
That allergy life. Would you mind just tilting the microphone? Like, it's in a good spot. If you just tilt it down towards
Blow.
Your mouth. Yes, I think that.
Like that?
I think that's nice.
I think it sounds good as well.
It feels good on the volume in your headphones. We're on independent mixes, so if you want up or down, we can do that.
I like independent. I think they got good trucks.
Yeah, lots of skateboarding bars in the raps.
Yes, yeah, bro, come on, skating's, that's like one of the, well, everybody, a lot of the rap shit is like, I want to be a ball player. Nah, I wanted to skate. I've just been always mad heavy, but Obama Hill, I'll drop in. But as far as getting up in the air, nah, we leave that to the not as heavy people.
That's not your move. You're more about like cruising on the skateboard.
Yeah, and bombing hills and jumping off of like high shit.
Man, how do you build up the strength to not bail? Like as soon as you get the wobbles going, like bombing hills, like I would always just bail out so quickly. I was so afraid to get hurt. Like, I don't think I ever got, I was never good at skateboarding because I never like broke that barrier of not being afraid to get hurt.
I'll drag a foot. I'll get hurt. Yeah. I just know my limits, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm definitely not semi-pro, none of that stuff. You know, none of the crazy stuff. But I've always just been around skaters, you know?
Yeah. You just got into it that way, just other
friends.
Well,
just having a board and being able to mob, and then when you're broke, and then you got to go faster.
Yeah.
And then you're like, all right, let me get some bigger wheels. And then just being high and just traveling places. You can jump out of a car, jump off a bus, jump off a train, jump off a plane, you know, not to the landing destination, but right, you get to any city, you got a board, you can just cruise around.
Yeah. There is something about the people I see traveling around the actual like airport terminals on skateboards. Sometimes I'm like,
people do that? That's
I've seen them do it. I think it's a bold move, but I think it's good. I think
it's like some 90s fucking coming of age movie shit. They're like playing some rock music or some ska. And then
it's like grinding on the people mover, like on the railings.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Just
like a gnarly guitar solo in the background.
It's
like,
montage of somebody rolling through the airport.
Yeah, they're going to let that happen. People should do it.
Do you watch a lot of skate videos growing up?
Oh, yeah, bro. The highest I've ever gotten in my life, I was in Seaside, Oregon, and my buddy's older brother, he was really good at skating, and he had like a Tickle Me Elmo in the room. Just for some reason, it was around that time when everybody just had a Tickle Me Elmo, and there was a skate video with like opera on, and there was like this black light just shining perfectly on this Tickle Me Elmo, and I was just fucking laughing. It's like 12 a.m. you know, his parents are Jehovah's Witnesses and they're just in the other room sleep, and I just remember being high watching the skate video and just looking over at Tickle Me Elmo like, ah, this is fucking great. But yeah, skating, just watching skate videos growing up around people that skate a lot, having a couple buddies that are pro, just spending a lot of time in Long Beach. They got some of the gnarliest skaters. Cherry Park, shout out Hammer City, shout out the homie Banks, shout out everybody.
Long Beach, California.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got a lot of homies out there and been going there since, you know, fourth grade.
Yeah. So growing up, Southern California is like such a part of the culture, no matter where you grew up in Southern California, whether it's the city or the suburbs. Hell, skateboarding is just
Where there's a lot of concrete, and even in like small towns there's hella good skaters. I just feel like the 90s, you know, that's when skating reached its it was most commercialized in the 90s, so everybody, you know, no matter where you're from, kind of got influenced by it.
Yeah, we're all playing, you were playing Tony Hawk whether you like skateboarding or not.
Yeah, it's crazy because like my best friend, her husband has a skate company in Ethiopia called Ethiopia Skate, and there's a huge skate scene in Ethiopia too.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's dope.
Did you learn a lot about music through skate videos, you feel like?
Oh yeah, bro. I feel like Tony Hawk Pro Skater, it's the first time I ever heard Motorhead. That's the first time I heard Del the Funky Homo Sapien outside of the Gorillaz.
Yeah.
A bunch of stuff, man. It's just, yeah, I heard a lot of definitely music from skate and just hanging out with people that skated and just hanging out with different types of people, you know, because before the internet, or I would go on the internet as much, it used to be a lot weirder and slower with the dial-up shit. Yeah, so I was like, I'm good. But people just wearing band shirts, you know, and you just go look it up. You're around somebody, you're like, oh, what's that? Somebody's wearing a band shirt. You go look it up. Oh, you like it or you don't like it, you know. That's kind of how I would find music. Or just going to the library, looking up stuff and,
yeah. Yeah, I remember you were telling me that you were one of those people that would go to the library and check out CDs and like comic books and
pair it up. Be like, all right, I'm about to read this X-Man. I'm going to see what this little Bow Wow's talking about. I'm going to read this, you know, Spider-Man. I'm going to see what this, the Gorillaz is talking about. That's kind of how I got into the Gorillaz as well. So, and you just, you take them back. You don't like them, you know.
Yeah.
You steal them next time. You go in there, take the little sensor off, and you got a cool little CD collection.
Do you like, if you're making music of your own, like especially, I know you make instrumental music at times, not just a rapper, you're making beats and producing stuff on your own. So like, are you heavily influenced by, would you say, visuals? Like, will you want to put something on in the background while you're making music, or is it full attention just on the music? No visuals necessary.
It just depends on the mood. And I'm reckless in the way that, there's this thing called Koala. You ever heard of Koala?
No.
It's this program you can download under your phone, and you can just make beats off of that.
Okay.
You can record any sound. You can record off YouTube, iTunes, whatever, has an internal mic. So I'll be driving, and I'll hear a song for a first time, you know, and I'll just, as dangerous as it is or not, I'm whatever. You just click a button, and you're like, man, I'm going to save this for later. So it just, any, I'm just inspired by anything. Like, I'll hear a sound. Like, Burial is one of my favorite artists. I don't know if you know Burial.
I recently got turned on to Burial by my buddy Matt. So I've been like going back and checking some of that music out. And it's I see why it has inspired so many people, or been like maybe one of those groundbreaking artists for somebody, especially making electronic music anywhere in that realm.
Yeah, because you have like Burial, for instance, he'll hear a bike tire and be like, oh, that's my hi-hat. You know, somebody will bump into something, and I'm like, oh, that sounded like a snare.
Yeah.
I'm just weird like that, to where I like to watch stuff sometimes, but I'll get inspired by just any interaction, a sound, like ADHD for real. So
yeah, man. I love field recordings like that, you know, because they're just like, they're moments you can't recreate. So like if you record that thing and then figure out how to use it in some way.
Well, like, it's kind of like, real life is almost like Vine sometimes. You'll be at a corner store somewhere and somebody won't have enough money, you know, depending on where you're at, and they'll curse the person out. Sometimes like, yo, I wish I could have sampled that. There's been times though I've been to the store and people have just been wilding out, and I'll just, you know, record a little bit. Not on no weird shit, but if somebody's being funny, like I'll record it.
Yeah.
And it's like, yo, that could be the intro to something. Or
yeah, it's funny how those things can act as these tools for like world building when it comes to creating a record or even just like a single track. I know, like going through your catalog, you like to have some of those, you know, those vocal narrations to set things up at times
and
just give you something extra to think about. Maybe whether it has, do you always feel like those pieces have relevance to the themes of what was talked about in those tracks, or is it sometimes just like, I'm gonna just throw this in here, this is something that, you know, switch things up or give someone something to chew on?
Well, I'm into like a lot of visual art as well. Graffiti, paintings, art installations, whatever. So it becomes like mixed media, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, you put it together. And I think sometimes a vocal sample is almost like, you know, if you have an opening for an art show, somebody will come up, they'll say something, and then bong, there you go. It's like, that's what's next. Or just sometimes a little narration will lead you into it. Sometimes you can overdo it, but stuff be inspiring me. Like, you know, if I hear one of my song, Funk Palahniuk, it has like this yogi talking, and that dude's hella famous now. So sometimes there's weird, I'll be ahead of the curve sometimes, like for real. Like Max B, I sampled a couple Max B shits, and then Knowledge sampled it later. But he doesn't know who the fuck I am, none of these. But sometimes that happens, you know?
Yeah, it's not like he was biting you or something.
Yeah,
but
or
it
I
is
was
like,
biting him. But
where it's cool to know that, like, I was ahead. You know, I had my finger on something, like, before anybody else did. Or
yeah, or also just making an obscure reference to somebody, to something or other that somebody will be into, you know? Maybe taking something that's famous that people are like a conversation or something. Or maybe a celebrity that, you know, somebody wouldn't think I would like, or just taking anything, you know, and giving it context. It's like, you could take something, that's what sampling is, you know?
Yeah.
You take something and you give it a different context and people look at it differently, you know?
Yeah. And for the people that thing hits for, like the people that might recognize what that is without having to like look it up, you get like, you're making some sort of extra connection with those people. I mean, and that's like why I've talked about it on this podcast before. It's like often I'm coming to rap music for your references, like as a rapper, like the things that your knowledge of pop culture, but like your specific knowledge of it is like what's exciting about it. Like when you're bringing stuff up about Tekken 3, some video game stuff, it's such a wide range with you, from like the skateboarding and the video games to the comic books and like the literature. And I just feel like you have so much to offer in that way, where it's like I don't know what to expect, but I find so many moments to like latch on to these little things.
Well, I'm the type of person who I have a conversation with anybody, you know, so I think a lot of the time, based on the conversations that I've had with people,
yeah,
just the array of people and just being interested, I learn a lot of stuff. And if I meet somebody from a different place and I try to ask them questions that are like, okay, you know, tell me about this, tell me about these things, because I'm so curious. So
yeah,
I just think my willingness to be open-minded about stuff gives me a lot more material. And, you know, I really like language and words and things. So if something stands out to me and is interesting, I'm going to put it on my music. And for instance, I'm really into Hinduism, not in like a niche way, you know, but like really into Hinduism. I've studied a lot of different religions. And I remember I was doing a show and had a buddy who was Indian, and he brought one of his homies. He didn't know any English to the show. And a couple of the reference points, like the dude after the show was like, how do you know about that? I was like, I didn't even think this was going to happen. So it's almost weird when you make a reference to someone or something, and the average person or just someone in general is like, I don't know what that is. And then that one person comes up like, oh, it's almost like a joke. It's almost a joke within a joke for a comedian. It's like in a reference you're making that a couple people are going to get within the one that the punchline, or whatever you want to call it, that everybody's going to get. So that's fun too. And it's like making something. If you make a certain type of food and then you're like, oh, this one particular ingredient is the thing that's standing out. I can't put my finger on what it is, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting for sure.
Yeah. I like it because it's like, it's cool for the people who get it, but, it doesn't take away, I don't think, anything from the experience for those who don't, you know. It's like when someone in a song reference is a very specific location, like whether that's a town that I'm unfamiliar with or a corner store in a particular town. It's like, I don't need to have ever been to that place to like get some of that feeling, like if you've delivered it in a certain way.
Yeah. And like for me, my grandma doesn't speak any English on my dad's side.
Okay.
And my grandpa has like had the thickest Southern accent, a lot of my family. And then you grow up around Ebonics, and I didn't know it was important to enunciate, you know, as a kid. So I kind of had a little Southern accent, LA, like weird, you know, just, you know what I'm saying? Not really just enunciate, just kind of talking, you know, like this. And then I had this corrections officer that I knew. She was like, you don't enunciate enough. And I was like, damn, you seem, you know, rather perturbed by this. I didn't say this at the time. I said some smart shit, but
yeah.
I started realizing how, just because I hear it a certain way in my head, when it comes out, it might not translate. So then I got really obsessive with just language and, you know, things like that. So I just am really obsessed with language and how it's applied to things, and to get your point across, you know. And I think that's what just kind of made me all over the place. And I want to know what I'm talking about. Like, I'll listen to a rap song and I don't know what nobody will be talking about, and I'll look it up and then I'll learn another thing. But what really set it into place is I love reggae music. Like, my mom used to get like the little bootleg reggae CDs, and you know, from the dude off the corner back in the day, you know, in LA, they would have somebody on the corner, yo, blah, 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 like every place. And you would just get these reggae mixes, and my mom would just get the hardest reggae mixes. And I just went online and printed out like 400 pages of, you know, all the reggae, all the patois, the slang. And people would be playing a reggae song, and I would just learn all the words. But that was another thing about language, where you hear it and you think they're speaking gibberish. They got their whole slang, you know. You can source it back to, you know, the original inhabitants of Jamaica, like the, you know, some of the earliest settlers of Kingston being like Irish. And then you realize that it was under British rule, so there was Indian people enslaved with the Jamaicans at the time. And you have the term coolie, which refers to Indians, and you have the term ganja, which refers to Ganges rivers. And then you have the Hinduism aspect of it, where you have the Hindus, the Sadhu Hindus, who have dreadlocks, you know, and then they're around these people. And, you know, there's some overlap with the African mysticism, and then you start seeing that. So the more I just uncover stuff by just researching it, it just made me just hungry for knowledge. Like, yo,
yeah,
what else can I figure out? What else can I figure out, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Like, you just found it very compelling. Like, every layer of it seemed to, like, offer something more.
Yeah, and then, like, Rastafarianism, that was a big thing growing up for me. Just something on my own that I discovered. And I started finding out about Hinduism and just seeing the parallels and seeing how, like, the mysticism from Hinduism, you know, influenced these, like, Afrocentric people that were trying to, you know, find an identity. And I don't even know if they consciously think about it. And that's what's crazy. I could have some behavior that I don't consciously think about that's influenced by something. So it's almost like me researching everything so that I know the behavior that I'm doing is authentic to what I believe, you know? So it just becomes like peeling back layers. It's when you try to deep clean a stove or something, you're like, I'm just gonna clean the stove. Yeah. And then, oh shit, I gotta pull the burners out if this is the electric stove, and you got under there, and then there's crumbs, and you're like, damn, now I gotta, it just, sometimes it gets too much, you know? So
yeah,
I'll just be trying to chill out and find a happy medium, you feel me?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, what do you feel like the key is for you for, like, finding a happy medium within all that?
Well, I remember when I was younger, I was really into, like, freestyle battling and a lot of the more cerebral raps.
Is this back, I know you've kind of, like, split your time between different places growing up, but was this back in LA or is this more Seaside, Oregon?
Well, I only lived in Seaside for, like, a couple months.
Okay.
And that's where I just got in hella trouble. That's like I was explaining to you, I got there and they're like, there's this hood kid from LA who has a big mouth and we're a bunch of like hood ass 3-6 Mafia white kids.
the meth kids.
The meth kids. Yeah. And they're like, I was talking about the correlation between the meth kids and the crack babies. It was like the us version of brokenness. So it was like I was the broke black kid and these were the broke white kids, and then we've like found common ground and eventually got cool. But no, I would say much later for me, I would say that I was freestyle battling and I was destroying people, and people would say, I don't even know what that means, but that's fire. Or I remember I was at this show in Oakland, and afterwards we're all battling, and I smashed this dude, like destroyed him. He was like, yeah, you're using all them college words. And I'm like, bro. So people would say that, like, oh, you rap, but you over rap. And that's not what I was trying to do. This is just where I am.
Yeah. But
when I would do my joke, when I would joke rap,
yeah,
when I would like mess around and not be serious, then people would lose their mind. So it's almost like I got good at freestyling, but when I just keep it to where it's all about the audience, who you're with. I'm not saying I'm compromising who I am as an artist or anything like that. It just depends on who you're with. Not everybody has the same aptitude. And sometimes it's pretentious to be like, the quantum physics of the Boston visit, thus my Glock was, dude. You know, you're like, people don't, sometimes you just be like, yo, this fool has a big ass head. And people would just be like, oh.
Yeah. I think that you can maintain authenticity and use different like filters within that. Like, I don't typically speak with all of the same language when I'm talking to my grandmother as I do when I'm talking with certain friends, you know?
It's fucked up because I do. I'm the, I, but
I kind of go in between, you know? It's
I wouldn't talk to your grandmother crazy though, but.
And she doesn't really care. I don't think she really cares that much.
You got so much. Yeah, that's real.
But
though.
I know she doesn't like. She doesn't talk that way or appreciate that language that much. But it doesn't like. It's not like when someone says fuck in front of her, like in our family, she's just like, oh my God, I can't. Like people loosely say it, you know.
It is important though to kind of like show. I think that's mad important to show respect to, like, yeah, like just aware of your audience, you know.
Yeah,
you know.
Do you feel like you appreciate both of those things just as much, like the goofiness of like stuff that's funny versus like maybe something that has like a lot of thought and like research into it that has kind of built a line that's maybe super intelligent? Or
it just depends, because just using big words doesn't mean you're intelligent.
Right.
It means you got a good memory, because people use big words and not know what they're saying and be out of context. And then I also think the term big words is like downplaying people, because for me, education wasn't something that was, how do you say this, like it wasn't encouraged. But there was not many people around me that could kind of like help me,
yeah,
you know, with making sure I was educated. But I knew that it was important, and I saw how it was threatening to other people to be intelligent. And I would say up until a couple years ago, I wasn't aware that people didn't like quote unquote intelligent people. But I also realized that I wasn't trying to act like that. Like, I'm not one of those people that are like, I know a bunch of stuff, I'm gonna come in here and try to dominate the
yeah,
situation.
Not trying to be like a pretentious intellectual yeah, person.
But I think some people think that, and it's like, yo, I didn't have anybody encouraging me to educate myself. I just knew that I had to, or I wasn't going to be able to get as far as other people.
Yeah. You think that's why you kind of like cling to, you know, really seeking out knowledge, like in all areas of just like trying to empower yourself and,
yeah,
and kind of raising yourself, like you were telling me about?
I think I reached a roof of like a ceiling to where a lot of the philosophy, a lot of the stuff that I'm into, or I was into a lot more. I like history as well. I like poetry, whatever. But a lot of this stuff is opinions. And there's so many people whose identity is based on the opinions that somebody else had. But then that person has shortcomings. That person may have never realized something or had an epiphany that could have impacted them, that could have been to the good or bad or changed their perspective. So I'm really just weary about how much I'm willing to take in of someone else's opinion. If it's like you plug this synth into this thing, and you know, sometimes there's just practical information that I just love. I'm at that point now where
science.
I like, yeah, I like working on my truck. I like, you know, different things like that. So I'll go learn that type of stuff. But as far as like these people were lesser than because of this, and trying to get on like this moral ground,
yeah,
I don't think you can, because even like I used to think communism was tight until I realized that not everybody around me is going to work just as hard as me, you know. So there's people that are going to find a way to be like, this person is working a bunch, I'm just going to chill back and not do anything. And I think, and a lot of the time, those people in their head don't even think that's wrong. I'm sure there's people that do things that are foul, and I probably do some behavior that I don't think is wrong because I was taught a certain way.
Right.
So then it becomes like, who am I to go around and try to be this like philosophizer and be like, my opinions on these things. So I'm just like, now I'm like, okay, how could I fix this? How could I do something to help somebody? How can I learn some engineering so that my beat sounds better? How can I learn some compression instead of being like, you know, I'm right. I don't want to be on that type of vibe with nobody. Like, I don't get down like that. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Where do you think your curiosity for people came from, as far as what you were talking about, as like, you just want to talk to people and you know, see where they're at and see who they are?
I was just raised by a bunch of people. Like, my mom had me at 15, and my dad was an illegal immigrant, you know? So he was just playing hide-and-go-seek with, you know, those people. So
yeah.
I didn't really have, like, someone I could go to, like, confide in besides my grandpa, I would say would be that person. But I just had to be in situations to where if I didn't let people know who I was or if I didn't get to know people, like, I depended on that. Like, I depended on just the world, you know? So I just had to learn. And then, like, I'm part Latino as well, so it's like I had to learn to get good at Spanish, you know what I mean? Because people, you got to pick growing up, you know? Everything's like gang mentality, whether you're in a gang or not. You know, everybody has a gang mentality. Everybody has a favorite sports team, you know, political feel. I look at that as gangs, you know what I mean? So you get to where you have to just start understanding people, you know? So I've had to learn, okay, what are the boundaries with this person? What is the appropriate behavior around this person? Or, you know, later in life, I was in foster homes, you know? Like, how do I, you just dropped off at somebody's house, you know? And they get a little rap sheet on what type of person you are, you feel me?
Yeah.
And then you have to be like, damn, I don't know what they know about me, you know? So I have to just, I don't know. It's just, I've always just been thrown out there my whole life. I've always been like a loner, you know? I have a lot of friends and people I love and things like that, but I've always just been like, and I think that's the, as an artist or someone who is observant, sometimes you gotta like step back and not, you can't pick a side sometimes, and that's hard, you know? So I've just always been curious about other people, and that's just led me to, you know, being diverse or whatever you want to call it. I've just been thrown into situations my whole life.
Like, yeah.
Here, figure it out.
Yeah. But spent a lot of time alone kind of creating and reading.
Yeah. And when I heard that Biggie or whatever memorized all his raps, and then I heard Lil Wayne did it and Jay-Z and all these people, I was like, I gotta be able to do that. And I didn't even think I was influenced by that until I got good at it and realized that's the people who would bring it up all the time. People would bring it up in reference to those people. So I just started, you know, memorizing my raps without paper and things like that, and reading and figure out, okay, these are the formulas that I need to freestyle, even though that sounds crazy, but I have like these different like formulaic thought processes, yeah, I go through that I've kind of just, you know, like these regimens and stuff. I, yeah, just use my brain to become the handbook for certain shit, you know?
Yeah, and you just kind of have these different, like, this playbook in your head for different situations. And
but everybody has that too, I would say. Like, you gotta memorize how to fucking turn the coffee shit on, and then it becomes second nature. Like, I'm, yeah, not like some fucking, like, it's just something I paid attention to, you know, to not use paper as much. You know?
Yeah. Did you start freestyling before you did any, like, of these written,
yeah,
like, obviously, like you're saying, you're not physically writing these things down, you're memorizing them, but like
I do for practices. Like, I'll do like writing practices because like I like how that feels expressively. But the first things I memorize is my uncle. He used to record in his bedroom as far back as pre-K. So I would chill.
Okay.
And then I would try to memorize his stuff. So I still remember his raps from back in the day. So I would memorize his stuff. And then whatever shit we had ongoing at school, I would just rap about that. And I don't know. I guess freestyling, I did kind of start freestyling first. But everybody freestyles a little bit to get to, you know, to go write something. You know, it's just,
yeah,
it's repetition. It's like memorizing a phone number. It's like until, you know.
Yeah, so when you did start doing written stuff and memorizing those raps, did that take your freestyling to the next level then because you were using your memory like in a different way? Or do,
yeah,
you feel like you were kind of always actively doing that along the way?
I think there's got to be some sort of like underlying ability. I'm not saying everybody can't get good at freestyling. I would,
yeah,
actually say some of my favorite artists are people that I watch and then by their third album, they're killing it. And this is no shade whatsoever, but like Lil Yachty, when he first came out, I didn't see it. And now I'm like, oh, Lil Yachty's tight. You feel me? Like, it's just artists that do that. So
yeah,
it's practice, but I feel like I did have a ability. There used to be this shit called the party line back in the day. I don't know if you remember that. Or just phone chat before MySpace and all this. You would just get on the phone have conversations. Yeah. So I would battle people on that.
Okay.
So it'd be like, you'd have like a little, yo, these are the bars, you Sam.
Yeah.
And then somebody would be like, oh, that's fire, but this. And then you can, then you connect with that person. And I remember, cause I was doing that in like fourth grade. Like I would be on the phone like that. And then I remember, I think it's either I spit an Eminem or a Big Timer's verse or something. And this fool was like, man, that's not you. That's so and so. And then after that, I was like, damn, like people be knowing. So I gotta get better.
Yeah, there's other people that love music just as much as you do that are like really know their shit.
Yeah. And I had this other fool tell me that one time. He was like, just find an obscure person and just say they shit, you gonna win. I'm like, bro, I'm not doing all that, bro. I gotta just get better.
Yeah.
I just can't be out here. And I remember JT Money, the song, I don't know if you remember, he had this song that was like, Who that trying to get up in my crew. And it was these two twin girls, and I spit that for them. It was like, oh my God, you should be a rapper. And that's when I was like, all right, I should rap. And then it just became people telling me I should rap. You know, like since I was a kid, like people telling me, it was never, I'm a rapper. It was people telling me, yo, you're tight. But there was no direct money correlation at that time. You know, and there was no, a lot of people I grew up around and listened to underground rap, you know.
Yeah.
They couldn't show me these rappers that I was more sonically, you know, related to. So I just was like, I'm weird. I'm saying all these raps, you know, I'm not talking about the typical thing, trying to get girls and all of that, you know. And that was never really my focal point, the type of music I was making. I was never like, yo, I was just making music, expressing myself, because I've had like a real ass life, you know, and that's the thing that I gravitate toward artists for, you know. It's like, what type of life have you had, or are you funny? Do I feel like this is you?
Yeah.
Are you trying new things? Like, I'm very open-minded when it comes to an artist experimenting with their sound, and I really like that. And that's why I like other genres sometimes more than rap, because rap could get repetitive sometimes, you know.
Do you think it was also just super important for you to find some way to express yourself as far as just, you know, what you were experiencing as like a young person, kind of being bounced around, not having like a lot of guiding lights around you, and you're just kind of like, well, this is the way I'm going to process the world around me then, is get it out in this way or write about it.
For sure. And I also think the expectation, somebody being from like South Central LA and have gone extensively through the juvenile judicial system, and just people wanting you to behave a certain way. So it's like, I think people want me to like not use my words sometimes so they could justify something they think. You know, not that I'm not opposed to that, but it's like a grown ass man, we can have conversations. And I think people, you know, will always tell me, bro, you're so big, why don't you? Because like, what is, like, I'm not a bully, I'm not trying to prove stuff. So I've always noticed that. And being like a big ass nigga from Los Angeles, I'm like the poster child for just being in the system, bro. And I realized that. I didn't know that. I didn't realize that, you know. So, yeah. Just being kind of like alienated. Just not really having strong, like, foundation and roots out here like that. I've always, like, it's the term trick you out of your position. Like, people would much rather you freak out, do some, like, wild street shit, so that you can be the example. Like, I told you. So I just got really good at using my words, bro, because I don't want to ever just do some dumb shit just because you said something about me, or I'm out here. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I don't got a problem speaking my mind. I don't have a problem, like, going to war about something I believe in. But just, I notice people want you to behave a certain way. I'm like, nah, bro. You know, I'm not going to go there with you because just gonna tell me, like,
yeah,
you're gonna be like, he did this,
and yeah,
I'm like, I'm cool on all that. So
when did that kind of like click in for you?
So yeah, like I was in Seaside and I didn't know what Measure 11 was.
This is like high school age.
Yeah, I didn't know what Measure 11 was, and like I would get in a lot of fights with people and things like that, and I got in some trouble, some legal trouble, where I was facing like a lot of time, like into my 30s, just of like fighting and stuff, you know. And I didn't realize that me saying, yeah, whatever, I did this, you know, I had this public defender who's still the homie, who was like, nah, bro, like you could spend the rest of your life as this criminal whatever person, like if you just take this time to realize that and just try to keep your nose clean, like you don't have to live the rest of your life being this type of person, because this is who they want you to be. Yes, you're from the circumstances that you're from, you moved to a place, it opened my eyes that there was white kids dealing with broken homes just as much as, you know, the people I grew up around, you know. And it just gave me another perspective. It was like, damn, I have the responsibility. I'm the person who controls my future, all of that stuff. Let me just prove these people wrong, because what do I look like wanting to be a criminal or a tough guy? Like I got so many opportunities, and I had so many opportunities that I saw so many people squander that I was like, I'm gonna take advantage of this.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just took me just getting in some trouble and realizing like, yo, nah, bro. Like, cause I was on my own. Like I said, I've always been on my own. I've always been like, I had my grandpa who would give me, you know, guidance and as a man on how to navigate. I had the women around me who raised me to, like, you know, they were aware of that as well too. And I just saw that, I don't know, man, just it's way more important to just be a man or be an adult than to just, yeah, be out here acting a fool for no reason, you know?
Yeah. Do you think, like, with that recognition, just even the way you think about making art change too, or like what you wanted to,
yeah,
how you wanted to go about making music, or like what you wanted to rap about?
Yeah, like the system, man. And I haven't said anything overtly political since the protests, because all my music, man, since day one, like, I wanted to be an anthropologist, you know, really bad. But once I realized the origins of that were trying to prove, you know, the inferiority of everybody else besides Europeans, and being in the system and where I grew up and seeing how crack did everything, and seeing, you know, the conflict with El Salvador and different conflicts and the parallels between the conflicts in El Salvador, the different African conflicts. And I just started seeing the system for what it was and seeing things for what it was. And I've always had political undertones to everything that I make. And I would say going through the system in the way that I did, seeing how afraid my grandpa was for my safety, you know, living up here, considering he grew up in the South, and, you know, when Emmett Till was lynched and just those type of things, I couldn't help but not have a political undertone. But yeah, I never did it in a way where I tried to preach. And I still bring things up, but I do it in such a way to where it's true to me. And I didn't try to monetize it and abandon it like everybody else does. And if you watch the patterns of people, they see what's going on, they monetize it for themselves, they make it about themselves, and then they move on. It was never about making a change. It was like, it's like, yeah, it's like how the church people do it. They get you super hyped up, and then they come around with the collection plate. Yeah. You know, and I respect sex workers more, because it's like, it's, they're getting you hyped up and having a good time. It's almost the same thing, but at least they're, I feel like they're, it's honest and blatant, you know? So if people were like more honest about the stuff they were doing, I'd be down with it. But I just when I see the cash grab for being political, it just turns me off, and I'm just completely turned off to publicized political movements. I think you could get a lot done by not saying anything, and I don't think it's wrong to move behind the scenes and get stuff done. And I think sometimes those are the most effective ways, because if Harriet Tubman was like, yo, we about to run away, yo, hey, everybody, we running away tonight, I don't think as many people would have prospered. So I think sometimes I've learned to just, yeah, the people who get it will, the people who don't are doing it for the wrong reasons. And I'm very political, but I'm not on anyone's side, and I'm just on humanity's side, like whatever's better for humanity. But I don't know what's better for humanity, so I'm not going to pretend, you know?
Yeah. Do you think that's one of the things you like about making instrumental music at times, and not having this like feeling like there's some obligation that you have to rap on all the music that you're going to make, and you're just kind of like diving in at times to putting out some beats that maybe have an opportunity to speak through that rather than actual words?
I don't know. I really, like, I like singing. I don't do it as much. I have been, you know, I have a lot of unreleased music, but I'm a musician, and I've been around a lot of people who've played music. So, you know, like I said last time, sometimes I'd rather play the keys because that expresses my soul more than, you know, something I could say verbally. And I think sometimes with how I may appear to people, you know, they're not going to want to hear that from me. There's definitely ways people view certain things to where they don't want to give it a chance, which doesn't deter me. It's just, I can express myself better with instruments sometimes, and I would much rather do that.
Yeah. Does that feel like a pretty different practice to you? Like rapping, writing, verse, making music?
Well, rap's easy. Rap's easy.
What do you mean rap's easy?
Is I've been doing it for so long.
Yeah, it's just kind of autopilot.
Yeah, yeah, and I've freestyled against people that know. Yeah, bro, you just, when you're in institutions growing up, when you're you on the blue line, the metro blue line, then you hop on a red line, and you're just going around, and then you're in the bay on the BART battling people, you know, you're in these little hillbilly towns battling people, you're battling people in Spanish, you feel me?
Like, yeah.
I've put in 500,000 hours. Like, I've been doing this, man, so it's just easy. It's nothing. And then a lot of the time, freestyle battling, you're just making stuff up to go along.
Yeah.
And that's easy, you know?
It's reps.
Yeah. So I understand why all these people have all this music out, because they're like lying, and that's easy. So it's easy to just say, I did this, I got these things, and make it sound good. And people that want to live vicariously through you will gravitate towards that. And the positive of that is, as well, like, people want to support you because they identify with you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. That's about sums it up, I guess. Rapping's easy to me.
And with the, like, if you're actually, like, making instrumental music, like making beats or whatever kind of, like, electronic music, that takes, like, real attention and, like, work. Like,
I wouldn't say that to even downplay it. The rap thing is just, I know the sounds that I like from the type of music I listen to. Like, I like a lot of dub reggae.
Yeah.
I think so. There's a lot of electric keys that just, as soon as I hear it, I'm like, I know I could freak this.
Yeah.
There's certain sound patches to where I'll add that to something and then turn it down just enough to where you, like, subconsciously hear it.
Yeah.
So it's just more fun sometimes, you know? And I notice when you're freestyling against people will start kind of like trying to sneak this or do little things like that. And it's like, I'm not down with that. Cause it's like, you're not about to sit here and sneak this to my face. And I'm gonna be like, this is cool. Obviously I don't take it that serious, but sometimes it takes more collective effort to produce music. Like, okay, you get on the drums, you do this. Sometimes I feel like for rap, it's like the producer and then the rapper. And sometimes those interactions aren't always fun. The producer thinks he's more important than the rapper and vice versa. And you're just, I could just be doing this all by myself somewhere. Or yeah. with people, our only form of communication is, okay, maybe this key. And then you're working out the communication through how, you know, seamless the music is coming out. So yeah. it's like, yeah, it's different experience for sure, you know?
Yeah. Do you feel like you get a lot out of the experiences when you are making everything on your own? Like if you're like making a beat and you're rapping on the track and you don't have like anybody that has to be there to facilitate the idea in any way?
It just depends, because it's like the Erykah Badu quote on her live album where she's like, you know, I'm sensitive about my shit. And it becomes like that sometimes where I notice the imperfections of an instrumental, so I don't want to rap on it. Or the positive of that is I'll make an instrumental, make a wave file, you know, download that and just mob around and freestyle to a beat. Or yeah. we'll be kicking it and people are freestyling and people feel a certain way when I start freestyling. You know, they may leave or something, or they might get a look. So I'm just like, you know what, let me just put an instrumental on. And they're like, oh, this is, so then I could just take myself out of the equation and be kind of like the background. So it just depends, you know. Like, I like playing beats for people and having them freestyle.
Yeah.
But I would say that the hardest part of, you know, the self-production is the discipline to pick something. Because it's like, oh, this sounds like this, or this sounds like this person. And I don't know. It is different. It's definitely different. It's a different thought process.
Yeah. You feel like sure. it's helpful, though, sometimes when you are making stuff in collaboration, when somebody's like, yo, this is it, man. Like,
oh, my homie Weez, like, he's a producer. He's from Portland. And I'll go to his house and I'll just bring my MPC and my synth. And I'll just go through different sounds. He'll be like, okay, that one. Okay, that one. Okay, that one. You know, I'm good at that as well. You know, it's yeah. people just picking out stuff.
And, curating a
yeah. someone bringing collection. Something to me and being like, okay, all right, this is the sample I'm thinking of. Can you chop it up? And I just learned that from just being observant and having to communicate that when I didn't have equipment. Because yeah. it really started off, I didn't have equipment. Like, I had a drum machine, and I freaked that, you know, from taking the Greyhound from here to LA almost every summer until I started flying or driving myself. And I just got good at that, so I got good at drums. Yeah, I pretty much instructed people in the beginning on certain samples to chop up.
Yeah.
Like my homies were good on their own, but I was like, okay, this is a reggae sample. Can you chop this up for me? This is where I was thinking. So I already had samples in my head.
You're orchestrating, you're producing in that way.
Yeah. So now when people do that to me, I could like put myself in that perspective or that position rather and be like, okay, I see what you're saying. All right, right here, right here. So yeah.
Yeah.
That's like another way that, you know, I can produce as well.
For sure. Yeah. And I'm sure that's like, you know, that's still part of the art of like making a record too. When you're working with other producers, is like curating like what beats like actually make it on that record, or like what makes sense as like a cohesive project.
Yeah. And there's days where I wake up at 5 a.m. mostly, you know, so I'll wake up, I'll pick a random BPM.
Yeah.
I haven't really been sampling a lot lately, but when I do sample, you know, I'll pick something random and then I'll try to make a beat, and then I'll make a beat, and then I'll end up making 5 beats, and like 3 of them are good. Sometimes all of them are good. Sometimes none of them are good, but just that process gets me in there.
Yeah. You know?
So I practice a lot. Every day, like, I make music every single day. Like, every single day I make music, you know.
Do you think that's just because you like that practice and kind of like that regimen?
I think it's the curse of being a musician, man. I think that it's just one of the only ways I know how to express myself. Like, lifting weights and making music are like my two favorite things, because you're guaranteed results if you keep at it.
Yeah.
Like, you could try to get a certain job, you could try, and you know, let's go back to this Rastafarianism thing that really like influenced me growing up. There's a term, vanity is insanity. So there's a lot of my life to where I felt like a sellout for even wanting people to hear my music and on a large scale. You know, I was just so focused on making it, the music, and not trying to come across as a holier than thou person or come across as like this superstar, whatever, whatever. So I think that it wasn't until I'm on and off all the time about, do I want the masses to see my music or am I just doing this for myself? So I think regardless if people know who I was, you know, fewer people know who I am than, you know, don't. So it's regardless, I would just make music. Like I just have to.
Yeah.
Like I got so many voice recordings of just songs that I've made up, you know, just because I'll think of a melody.
Yeah.
And then I'll record that. And oftentimes I don't even go back to it. Like I'll go back and be like, damn, 200 voice notes. This sounds like a reggae banger. Oh, this sounds like I just got to do it. It's like the angst I have, you know, my energy is creative and that's how I just get it off, you know?
Yeah. That helps you feel balanced and like clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do it for myself, but I do like other people's reactions. And I realize that I really like electronic music. I really like jam band music. I like funk, things like that. Sometimes people just want to vibe out and dance. They don't want to hear your voice.
Yeah.
You know?
So you've been exploring making that type of music too?
I've been doing that for years, man. I just don't. I had to perfect it before I wanted to show other people.
I think it's cool to show that restraint, you know, and not just like, I mean, I think both are valuable to like maybe show something off in the early stages if that's like what you really want to do and like subject yourself, I guess, to.
I made over a dozen projects. That's why it's like I can take a break.
Yeah.
Regardless of what, because there's music there. Like I have a whole universe of music. So it's like the break that I took was to learn about more things in the industry. And the more I learned, the more I realized I just want to be by myself. Like I have my homies. I have people that I like to collaborate with.
Yeah.
But there's this thing that I see that happens to people where they get some recognition and something in their brain switches. You know, it's almost like in Lord of the Rings when Bilbo shows them the ring. That almost happens to people. And I can kind of see that because I'm very observant of people's behavior. And that just makes me like, okay, let me let this person have their whatever it is. I don't even know what to call it. So yeah. I just see a lot of that. People get consumed by attention. So,
I think it's probably pretty easy to also, you know, like if you're a kid. Yeah.
If you're older and you're doing that, in my opinion, is like you should have. I don't know. I just don't believe in the switch up. I don't believe in the switch up. I don't believe in the, okay, I have 80 million followers now. I'm going to unfollow everybody except for, you know, Zendaya or something. Like,
yeah. I think I just like met more along the lines of like sometimes when I have people on that have maybe had a song that's like really kind of popped off, I'm always curious if they kind of chase that like what that was in some ways. And I found that it seems like most of them do not like don't necessarily, but it can get in their psyche more about like why did that one pop off over like another song. And I think that that's like
we're trying to chase
interesting
hits.
Like part of the like creative process, like not necessarily like chasing hits, but like I feel like it's probably pretty easy to like get caught up in like, oh, what was that feeling that I like tapped into when we made that song that 2 million people streamed opposed to like this one that less than 600 did or some shit.
Well,
you know,
I love a good hit. Like I don't have any problem with a hit. Like we need a hit. When I'm high or a little faded and it's like 2 in the morning, and they're like, all right, we're about to close the club or wherever you're at.
Yeah.
Or a house party, and you just hear a banger.
Yeah.
When you hear Me and You by Cassie, it's me and you. I'm waiting. Like, I'm about to start gigging. So it's like, we need those hits.
Yeah.
And it could happen on intentionally. It's whatever. Like, I'm not, I have no say, and I don't even have a right to tell anybody how to make their music. But the question comes, the next question is, why are you making it? If you're in it to make hits and you fail and you still behave in a way that you're better than everybody else,
yeah,
because of one thing, I'm gonna avoid you completely. Because when your music's not on, we're just people, you know, despite your accolades, mm-hmm. like despite anything. So it's all about, like, what is your intention? Is your intention to make this hit, to do these things? I have no say. I don't have any right to tell anybody how to pursue it. But if your goal is to get attention and mob around with an entourage and do all of that stuff, that's cool. But I just, in my life, I've never had to do any of that. So I can't relate to that. I can't. I'm not out here trying to make a hit so people could come up to me and be like, oh, you're so cool, what can I, you're the best. Like, I'm not doing this for people to come up to me to tell me I'm the best. I'm not doing this for any of that stuff, because I've had a lot of accomplishments in my life already that aren't music related that make me happier than, don't get me wrong, like, I love it, and I'm sure if I had that experience, it would be cool, but I just know what type of person I am, that I'm not going to change the way that I treat people, or I'm not going to change the way that I behave because I had this huge thing happen. And, you know, a million plays, what's that, like $5,000? You go work a gig that has tips, you could do that in a couple weeks. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, to kind of answer what you said, people can get, you know, high from those things, and I'm sure it feels good, but I don't base my worth as a person off of how many people have heard my music. And I'm not saying people should or shouldn't, but I just don't base my worth and how good I feel off of how many people think I'm cool or not.
Yeah, no, it's a, I feel like that's a good place to be.
Yeah,
it's probably why you're making good music too, I would assume. Appreciate, you know, it,
yeah. But yeah, some people are, can freak that. Some people are like, yo, I made a hit, this is a banger, and be the coolest person and make hella hits. Like, yeah. I love Frank Ocean. Like, I love The Weeknd. I remember I went and saw The Weeknd for like $15 right when he came out, like back in the day at the Rose, and it was crazy, you know? So I don't have no problem when I hear a hit, when I hear a song that goes viral and it's a banger, I'm not going to be like, this is ruining hip hop. This is not.
Yeah, man. I love bangers. I love some good pop music, you know, you know, something that people want to dance to, you know.
It's, I like Bryson Tiller's new album a bunch. Like, I love Bryson Tiller's new album, you know, and that one song that everybody, he's got the, I'm gonna take her bougie ass to bodega about, or to, yeah, whatever he says in a song. I don't really be bumping that song because I've heard it enough times that it's in my brain.
Yeah,
I want to hear some other stuff he did. So I peeped the album. And it's crazy. It's like, cool, I'm listening to Bryson Tiller right now. Like, you know, the homie, not the homie, I don't even know why I said the homie. Maybe I'm hoping for the future. But L.A. Priest, I don't know if you know who he is.
I don't.
He's a dope-ass indie artist. He makes, like, drum machines and stuff. Okay. And he just came out with an album that's fire. He kind of sounds like if Prince did psychedelics and kind of lived in, where would he live? And like Europe. He's just this weird, he's like if Damon Albarn and Prince kind of had like a clone.
All right.
He's fire. But he just came out with a new album and I'm listening to that, and yeah.
What do you feel like at this point in your life, are you still on that kind of program where you only just memorize all of your lyrics? Like, are you ever sitting down and actually writing things? And like, and if so, like, what do you feel like compels you to write at this point?
So for me, writing, and I've had, you know, teachers and stuff telling me this in the past, that's not your writing voice. 'Cause I get I get pretty, my writing's crazy. Like, I took writing 123 in college, and I've just taken a lot of classes, like literature classes and things, to where it just doesn't seem like me, which is another way of saying this shit's too fire. That's what I take it as. So when I start writing, it's almost like a syllabus for the assignments I have for myself as a musician. It's like, okay, I'm going to write this thing out. The motions of it make me feel so official. I'm just like, all right, these are the feelings that I have right now. This is where you're at this point in your life. It's almost like me having an external monologue with myself, and then I'll reread it, and then I'll kind of write down some points and emotions that I have and things like that, so I can see it and then come back to that while I'm either listening to instrumentals or just referencing stuff in my brain, you know. Sometimes it helps me to write it to get like the full vision of what I need to do mentally. But I like writing. Like, I like it. It's just being busy, like a manual labor person that's just moving all the time.
Yeah.
I've had to memorize stuff, because if I'm just depending on writing it, you're working 14-hour days.
Yeah.
You're not going to find that time, you know? So then I'll get home and lay down and I'll listen to an instrumental, and then, you know, it'll come together like that.
Yeah, and you've already been thinking about it all day repetitiously in your head, so you've got it there.
Yeah, but I do write, because sometimes it's fun. Like, I'm somewhere, I'll write. I hate writing on the phone, but I still do it. I like pen and paper, you know?
Yeah, you get something different out of that, like, experience with something, like seeing the ink hit the paper, and there's something about it, like, you have to, like, actually scratch shit out, too, if you don't like things that you wrote, instead of just, like, hitting the backspace button.
But I don't think it's, like I said, I'm not a purist, man. Like, if you want to use your phone, if you can't, like, everybody can express themselves however they want. Like, whatever works best for you to get it out, there's really no right way to do it.
You know? Are you ever just writing, like, more, I guess, free form? Like, stuff you're not, like, necessarily intentionally thinking about putting on raps, or, like other, just other forms of writing that you enjoy?
Yeah, like I said previously, I'm raw at cursive. So when you, I don't know, something about it, the cursive flow, when you just start writing, it just starts coming out, and it's fire. Like, I love just, sometimes it'll just be some free thoughts, some free flowing thoughts, and then I'll start rhyming, you know?
Yeah.
It just depends. I like writing poetry. I like writing about my real feelings, because nobody wants to hear, nobody expects or cares if you're a masculine fool going through hella shit. So I'll just write the most emo, and then my soul was whoop-de-whoop, and then, you know, I'll crumble it up and throw it away or something, or keep it. But, like, I'm dramatic, bro. Like, you gotta be dramatic to write. Like, you just gotta be, it's theater in a lot of ways. So I'll write all these emotions about how I feel on some old school diary type shit. Yeah.
Why do you think nobody wants to hear about a big masculine dude and his, you know, his emo feelings?
Because the average person I know.
Yeah.
Are just like, if I was you, I would just be out here beating people up. And people would be telling me that, bro. They'd be like, yo, if I was you, I would just go punch him right now. And I'm like, nah, bro, what are you talking about? Like, like, I'm just saying, bro, you have that option. You have that on the table. Like, people present it like that's an option.
Like, that's how you can solve
that's
everything.
That's just, yeah, you just,
yeah,
I would have did this. And it's like, nah, man. And I have a lot of emotions, bro. Like,
yeah,
I'm very in touch with my emotions. I got a lot of counseling as a kid, like, just being in the system. And, you know, I've been able to read the DSM-4. It's DSM-5 now. But, like, I've been really into psychology, and That came part of proving, okay, I grew up in these circumstances. The way that I feel is temporary. Certain diagnoses or whatever they try to give you, I'm not saying all, you know, but are temporary, especially when you're in your teens and you're developing and you've had these traumatic experiences. You know, once you start talking about those things, some of those feelings go away. So I've just I've always been aware of my emotions, and my family historically, just based on my grandpa and what everybody has told me, I'm gonna tell you. I'm just gonna tell you what it is. I don't believe in grudges. Just because if I see someone and we don't speak, that doesn't mean there's a grudge. That just means that connection's gone. But I don't like to harbor or manifest ill feelings towards people. And to have a dialogue with somebody is super important to me.
Yeah.
And I think that you have to kind of be aware of your abilities to be able to have that, or be aware of what you've done to apologize to someone or be able to forgive yourself. So I've really focused on like my emotions, and I'm not saying I'm perfect or anything, but I really do pay attention and then reflect on my behavior at the end of the day, or reflect on how I acted in a certain situation. And, you know, I can admit fault. I can say I'm sorry. I can do all that. But that comes from me being in touch with my emotions. You know? So I'm not physically reactive. You know, I might make a spectacle and gesticulate and shit, but I'm ethnic. Like, that's what I'm supposed to do. Like, but I'm not going to come up and be like, you don't like what?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And like I said, it's part of the expectation is for me to just wild out.
Yeah, because like, you're just a big fucking dude. Yeah, and people are like, just like, out. Yeah.
And I didn't pay attention to that, because I grew up around big ass people. My family's big, and they don't expect you to want to have a conversation about something deep. Not saying I want or to be goofy. Like, they, so did you play football? Did you do this? No. I knew that at an early age that if I keep tackling somebody, it's probably not good for my brain or my body later in life. And that was one of the expectations. Like, you should play sports.
Yeah, you're a big dude. You gotta play
sports.
You
should do this. Like, I want to get into jiu-jitsu more. Like, I've dabbled in, you know, martial arts and fighting style throughout my life. But I think jiu-jitsu would be cool, yeah. You know? Like, all that other stuff, I was, like, just trying to find myself and, you know, find some sort of discipline. But as far as, like, physically presenting myself as somebody that is, I don't know, man. It's just corny, bro. And, like, it's just corny, bro.
Yeah.
But I see people who aren't even like that trying to be like that. And I'm just like, bro, I got to ignore you. Like, any situation where it's some fake tough guy stuff, like, I stay away from that. It's corny, especially as you get older. So
how important do you feel like finding the piano was for you, and like how it kind of like shifted maybe your thoughts about music or like what you love about music?
The house I grew up in LA, there was a piano, and it belonged to my cousin Velvet, and she has autism. She actually just got a double mastectomy a couple weeks ago, so bless up to her. But she had a piano, and she wouldn't let me play it. Her mom, who actually brought me back. I was supposed to grow up in Mississippi, and my grandpa took me to Mississippi, and I ended up coming back when I was 2 years old. I was only there for like a couple months, but that's the house I went to, and they had a piano, and she was bedridden because she had a stroke. And then Freddie, her daughter who raised me, like, In hood-ass situations, just whatever, rural-ass situations, you got these older cousins, and they're your auntie, ultimately. So yeah. Freddie was pretty much my auntie, and she had fibromyalgia, so she would be in bed all day. And her mom, you know, who passed, she had some health complications, and Velvet would be at this behavioral school for, like, adults with, like, developmental disabilities. And when they would leave, I would play the piano. There's this guy, Mac, who I'm pretty sure it was a Mac, just showed me. He was like, you put your three fingers right here, and then that's a chord. And then that's kind of, it was forbidden. like in Nacho Libre when he's like, "It's forbidden. This is forbidden." That's why I was like, "Yeah, I'm learning it." And later in life, when I would be around pianos, I would just play them. And then I got to Eugene. My buddies, they had a band called The Venture Galley, which became Golden Casio. They live in New York now. They would wake up late, and they had hella instruments at their house. So I would just play the piano while everybody was still asleep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're talking about the Gold Casio cast?
You know Gold Casio?
Yeah, like, did you ever go to the church house that they had?
Yeah, my homegirl lives there. Like, I still go to the church.
Oh, damn, that place is crazy. I only went there once to do a podcast.
Golden Casio. Actually, Brock is the dude who gave me Ableton.
Oh, nice. Like, yeah.
He gave me Ableton.
Yeah, I still see Ben, who played drums with them for a while. For he's still in town.
Yeah, those are the homies. Like, when I'm out in New York, like, I make it a point. Like, I've known those fools since 2008.
Damn. Yeah.
Like, those are my boys.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they actually, that's fire that you know them, because they just had drum sets, they had everything, and we would be partying. And just my whole life, I've just naturally woken up early. So they would be asleep till like noon. I wake up like at 6.
Yeah.
I would just be in the garage, just, all right, I'm going to hop on the drums, and then I'm going to hop on this. And then I wouldn't know how to turn shit on. So when he would wake up, I'd be like, yo, how would you do this? And they would hop on, and they're way more fire than me. So I would just be like, all right, let me just fall back real quick and watch y'all do y'all thing. But yeah, just the piano was always around for me. Then I took a fundamentals class on how to read music, and that was dope. And just the piano, if I was an instrument, it would be the piano, because, yeah, just you could do so much. And it's a percussion instrument. People don't think about that as well.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
You know, if you're like used to banging on stuff, making beats, like the piano, if you know how to play the piano, making beats, if you could like translate it mentally, it's pretty much the same thing.
And it's got to help with the rapping too, because that's like such a rhythmic thing. And
I don't know. For me, rapping, I just think of like mental body motions, like way that people be rapping, and you know, it's like all this invisible stuff, like,
yeah,
you know.
But that's rhythm, right?
Like, yeah, but for me, the keys, it doesn't translate to rap for me. Maybe the keys translate to writing.
Okay.
Because of like the flow of it.
Okay.
But just rapping, I don't know. I could hear anything and start rapping. Like, you could put on some Bjork right now, start gassing.
Yeah. Like, there's nothing about like a non-traditional, like a track that has like no pocket that like makes you scared of it, or like not willing to just like make the beat work for you kind of thing.
Nah, then just growing up, we would make fun of songs. So it's like you could put on a Backstreet Boys song right now, and I'll figure out a way to gas over. You could put on Taylor Swift, I'll gas. I'll just all over her. You won't even, you're like, oh my God, how'd you? It's just, yeah. Because it's funny. Like, making fun of songs is fun.
Yeah.
You know? That's kind of freestyling to me. It's like jokes. I would say comedy helped me freestyle.
The riffing.
Like, I love, that's something I really want to do, is do stand-up. Because I love comedy. Like, I remember Richard Pryor records growing up, my grandpa, and just, yeah, listening to comedy. That's a huge part of my life and creative process, is just comedy. I love laughing. Like, I love laughing so much. I watch stand-up almost every day, you know, before bed, so.
Yeah, you feel like it's important for you to, like, make sure that dynamic, like, that part of your personality is shown off through the music in some way?
Yeah.
Like, in making sure that you're like showing the funny side.
Oh yeah. I'll be saying shit. Or just being goofy, like on IG. I'll be joking a lot. But I feel like some people here don't get it. You know. But yeah, I like joking around. I like being funny.
Yeah, man. I was telling you the other day, like, just one of the things I love about listening to your catalog of music is that, like, it just doesn't feel like it's from necessarily a certain time, so it like makes it like really easy to go back and maybe listen to Better Off Dread that's 10 years old or so, or even the previous records, and they still feel like really fresh to me.
Yeah, because I feel like there's a basic, like we were talking about earlier, formulas, you know. You could describe the plot of a movie, you know, use different situations, use different characters, but like the basic formula to convey a certain emotion is there. You know? You have the buddy comedy, the coming of age movie, you have so many different things, documentaries. There's so many ways to express it, you know?
I noticed going through the catalog of music that often the records are definitely like not filled with a bunch of features on it, you know? Like there's usually only like one or two. Is that something that has happened very intentionally for you, or is it just a circumstance?
It is intentional, but God's honest truth, man, like I would say even a couple of my features I didn't really like. I just, people are like, yo, let me get a feature, or in this situation and we'll do it. And sometimes I don't like operating like that. Sometimes I do that and it comes out beautifully, but rappers don't want to get outshined. And going back to the thing I said about vanity is insanity.
Yeah.
I don't make this music to be like, oh, I'm tighter than this person. And when somebody tells me I'm better than somebody, I don't take that in a heart because I don't care. So what I've realized is that a lot of rappers, they don't want that, bro. They don't want that. They don't want to be on a track with me because if I outshine you, you're going to be offended. But don't get me wrong. Like I got homies that I've collaborated with and it was cool, but rappers don't be wanting that, bro. Like I'll show people music. I'm like, bro, this is crazy. Like I didn't know you could like, damn, bro. I'm like, all right, cool. Like, so yeah, people don't want that. And I've got it on tracks with people and I've gassed them and then they don't want it to come out. So you have that happen.
Yeah. As far as like maybe the, I guess it doesn't matter if it's come out or not come out, but you know, I've heard quite a few of your features like on Milk Shit and like some other people's stuff. And do you feel like your approach to making those, like doing those verses is a lot different than when you're making a solo track for yourself? Like you're really taking into account what was there before? Or?
Not necessarily. It just depends.
Like, yeah.
I don't think there's any true approach. I think it's just the feeling at the time.
You know?
That dictates how the song's gonna come out. But, and I also just like to do my own thing because I don't have I have my style, which is Soup expressing itself.
Mm-hmm.
Talking in third person is crazy and pretentious, and I'm not gonna do that anymore. But what is somebody else going to say on the track that I can't say? You know, what are they going to say? You know, what are they going to say? I could say it in a different style, you know?
Yeah.
I've never, some people like recording in group situations and sometimes I'm just like, nah, I want to tell my story. Cause then if you say something that I don't agree with or you throw shots at somebody.
Yeah.
Like, what am I going to do? Be like, sometimes I just don't want to collaborate with people. I don't know.
Like, interrupts the narrative that you're trying to lay down.
Which is weird. And then I'm just not dependent on someone else to, like, there's plenty of people I could hit up. I have homies where I'm like, yo, I could get a feature. I could do all that. But I want this to be, like, my universe, you know. And then when it makes sense to collab, I'm down.
Nobody rescue me, I'm just an effigy. New York Synecdoche, pressure to guess like it's Jeopardy. Publicly pressure while having my press release. I got integrity, I be some felonies. Niggas been telling me, bomb on them butterbean bellies. You better be KO and everything. Put that on Delarish, like she my auntie. Y'all nosy, I do this allegedly. Moves in agility, you just a petty thief. Jetty, the brethren has been here before. I just do this for memory. Who is you kidding me? Using auxiliary company policy. Black as I gotta be, they not too fond of me. That shit is comedy. I'm an anomaly, you not the honorary. Classical tape deck, we not no twins on no Apex. Fame tickle brain check, when I pop out it's a lyrical wave check. Picture me homeless and sleeping in Beamers.
As I left, but I'm here and I'm keeping a musician and just an observer, there's always like a third party to stuff that's invested into an artist that sometimes they block interactions, you know? So I think sometimes features don't happen and things like that because there's a third party element.
Yeah.
So sometimes that gets in the way. Or
for sure.
There's people who are latching on to someone who is so focused on the success of whoever they're latched on to,
yeah,
that they have too much of an opinion on how things are going to go,
mm-hmm,
or they've tried to latch on to you and you notice that. So once you in the future go to try to collab with the artist, that person is there like blocking it.
Yeah.
So sometimes that happens and that's why things don't happen.
For sure. Know? Yeah. Well, yeah, man, I definitely think your music stands alone. It was not like a question of like, oh, why aren't there more people on? Like, I was just kind of genuinely curious because it did feel like it was intentional in some, like, I can't imagine that. Yeah. It was like, if you wanted to have a bunch of features aside from what you were just talking about, as far as things getting blocked sometimes, like, I know if you wanted to have features, you could have them and you got people you could hit up for that.
Well, the features but, I want aren't necessarily the people who make quote unquote the same style of music as me. Like,
yeah.
You know who Shani Bin Laden is?
I don't.
You know who CEO Trail is?
No.
Yeah, those are people who I would want features.
But I'll be
from.
Looking it up now. This is like part of what you were talking about as far as like when you know you stumble upon something you don't know, especially when people throw music at me and I'm like going back listening to this, editing this podcast, I'm going to look these people up and I'm going to find their music.
Cuz I like a lot of the underground more street stuff.
Yeah.
Because I feel like those are the people society don't want to be successful. And even though I'm not presenting as a street person or all that,
yeah,
I think that I'm from those same circumstances and just my experiences that those aren't the people they want to be as successful. So yeah. I like listening to people that come from circumstances to where it's like, yo, how did this person even come from out of that? So I find myself liking a lot more of the like trap stuff as of late, cause, and they're funny, bro. Like this dude Shani Bin Laden's hilarious. Like this dude CEO Trail, they're funny, and their references show that they're intelligent. And that's another thing. I think accents prevent people from diving into an artist's catalog because they have a southern accent, and then that's associated with, well, they're not as intelligent, or, you know, or their music, they're having too much fun. They can't be smart, you know? So, a lot of the people I want to collaborate with are people that make different styles of rap than me, or are a singer, or is in a band, you know? So I want to collaborate with people that aren't necessarily rappers because, I kind of got it. I could rap on some stuff, you know? I don't really need nobody to help me.
You can certainly rap on some stuff, man. You are,
Appreciate it.
You're a killer. Like, I love your shit. And like I told you earlier, like, I love your references for things. And yeah, I just like, it's very undeniable listening to your music that you are like undeniably like good and like just such a good lyricist, and your delivery for things is, it's very easy to see that you are good at this. You know?
Man. And a lot of my production on my new stuff is in directions that people I previously collaborated didn't want to go. And I didn't even at the time to really feel like I didn't want to rap on no trap stuff because I thought it was cliche.
Yeah.
I didn't want to rap on certain. Now I do, you know, and I make a lot of trap beats, and I'm not a purist. I'm not like, oh, it has to. Nah, I love all of it. But a lot of my stuff now, I guess, would go under the title or label of being kind of like more bangers, you know?
Yeah.
Because I want to have fun, and summer's coming up, but I'm still gassing, you know? It's like,
yeah. You can do both. You can have fun and show how good of a rapper you are, for sure. Yeah,
and I'm trying to have fun now, man. I'm just trying to have fun. Like, I was at a dark place last year in my life, and I had a lot of stuff happen, and now I'm like, cool, I'm trying to have fun again. Like, I'm healthy, I'm in a good place. Allergies kicking my ass a little bit, but
yeah,
I'm chilling. You know,
is that where you're seeing like a lot of growth then? Like just even seeing in yourself that you just want to have fun and
yeah. And I don't have the same desires as other people, because I think what happens is if you don't have experience in life to where you're congratulated for things, or you don't do things that, I don't even like using the term pride, but that doesn't bring you any sort of like gratification.
Yeah.
And rap, you cling to little things. You cling like, oh, this is crazy. This is, but it's like, I'm in my 30s, bro. Like the same type of reaction from somebody hearing my song for when I was younger, it's not the same to me.
Yeah.
It's like, I've met these artists. Like these are people. These are just random ass people.
And yeah.
That's not to say they're not talented, but I just don't, there's not a lot someone can tell me that would make me be like, oh, this is crazy. Like what would be tight to me is just have a, like a sold out show or something, or to perform overseas, which is stuff you could do yourself, you know? Yeah. So I just think at this point in my life, I'm not looking at music to accomplish things so I can go online and be like, I told y'all I'm the best. I told, yeah. Like that's a little kid shit to me, man.
Yeah.
I just want to make great music and meet people who like to make good music and laugh and be happy, like mental health, things like that, you know? There's not really something someone can give me to make me feel like, oh, I did it.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be in a position to help people around me. You know, people look at me as like a provider. People look at me as like a leader, you know, and that's what I want to be. I don't care about being considered the best rapper because, like, not everybody wants to hear what I have to say, you know, and I don't want to hear what everybody has to say, but I'm open to it. You know, I'm open to it. So if people are open to just experience my music and my expression, that's all that is cool to me, to give it a chance. But I'm not about to have something incredible happen and then switch up and become like this megalomaniac piece of shit, you know.
Sincere interactions.
Hell yeah.
Well, I can't encourage people enough to go check out your music, Soup. You've got a lot up there for people that are new to you. Or people that are familiar, there's just like so much music to go check back on, and yeah, just like a lot of records that I appreciate. And
do you know who Andy Savoy is?
I do know who Andy Savoy is.
We are working on a project.
I'm excited to hear that. Yeah. I know about Andy through the work that he's done with Milk, actually.
Yeah,
and I like love the projects that him and Milk have done, so I'm very excited to see what you guys are cooking up. And
yeah, we got some shit.
Hell yeah. And I'll put all the links in the episode notes so people can keep up with you. And yeah, man, I'm glad that we did this.
Yes.
I appreciate you taking time to hang with me. And we end every episode of The Soup with the guest saying the tagline for the show, which is, it's a program. Just the way that my grandfather says the news program, or anytime he says the word program, he says program. I recently found out that he thinks that he says program, which is great. I love that part of it. So if we can get the Soup Dread, it's a program, we can properly sail this thing out.
Okay, so Thanksgiving. You typically have the sitcoms and you have the pilgrims. And the pilgrims came over on a broadcasting network. And as soon as they touched the land, they met with the sitcoms. And as soon as these sitcoms met up with the pilgrims, they realized that it's a program.
You nailed it, everybody. That might be one of the top. I don't know.
See, yeah. I'm still perma-fried. I got it.
Nobody has done that. That's like the most unique one for sure. I can't think of one that stands out more than the Soup Dread. It's a program. He nailed it, everybody. Check out the music. We're gonna play the episode out with one of my favorite tracks in the entire Soup Dread catalog. It's off that Better Off Dread record from 2014, and it's the Cubits.
Hell yeah,
love that track. Soup Dread,
peace. Yeah,
appreciate you, man. Thanks for doing the thing.
Thank you.
That's the Jelly Jams, and we will catch you on the flip side, Portland or wherever you are listening or watching from. And get ready for more of this leg action. If you're watching, it's summertime, baby, and I'm gonna be wearing these shorts all summer long.
That thigh. Them thighs.
Hell yeah.
Body bending and polyrhythmic, you probably timid.
I believe it.
Body bending and polyrhythmic, you probably timid.
Courage and cowardice, an inch when an hour slip. It was they and then, it's me now and this. Compile events, frisk our prowess tense. It's our risk, I am he who the crowd resents. Flint flicking the wrecking, twine tied to a zeppelin. Bolt to thermite from out of my septum. Kool-Aid blooded niggas with flesh of pectin. Untied shoelace trip consecutively second. Hit you like a Hachi from Tekken, it's just then. I bust double decker like I'm Desmond on any soundboy who wanna avoid the crown joy. Deploy your